following podcast is intended for an adult audience only.
It contains strong language, strong opinions, and themes of a sexual nature.
So if you are under 18, or indeed difficult to please, this isn't the podcast for you.
Welcome to another episode of Varying Degrees, a BDSM podcast with me, your host, Cool Hands, and as usual, joined by my good friend, Burns. Say hello, Burns.
Hello, Burns. It's not what you meant, is it?
It's not what I meant, but hello. We will be visiting our usual stops of the Encyclopedia of Unusual Sex Practices, and obviously topping things off with another rendition of Jock and Naughty with our friend, Burns, where he's going to read some extract from some bad erotica.
Literary fiction, actually, but, you know, it's from the Bad Sex and Fiction Awards, and it's one of the winners, too, you'll be glad to know.
So, I look forward to that, because I always do enjoy the Jock and Naughty. But we've, again, got a guest with us to sort of stick to what we've proposed as our new format, and this month we're joined by a friend of yours, aren't we, Burns?
Indeed we are. We have the wonderful Billy joining us.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Or morning, or whatever time you're listening to this.
To meet you, Billy.
Likewise, I'm sure.
You know, Burns, but this is actually our first time meeting or speaking, as it were.
Yeah, I've known Burns for far too long.
Must be 10, 12 years, something like that, at least.
Yeah, 10 years, I'd say. 10 years.
And do you mind me asking what sort of geographical area your local community or the community you've been involved in is?
So originally I first got into a community which was in Norwich, which was where I was living at the time. Really nice, really friendly community up there. And then various work reasons moved to Reading.
That's for Burns' connection then, Reading, because I think you've been to a few peer events in Reading, haven't you, Burns?
A couple. But it wasn't originally on the scene that we met.
It's far more to do with beer than kink.
Aye. A lot of alcohol was consumed. I think it was a beer festival.
Actually, I've much to my own dismay, I've not had that much involvement specifically with the Reading community. I've been to events in London, but just various reasons I've not managed to get around to getting involved with the Reading community.
Well, yeah, I guess the difficulty is with lockdown. I've spoken to Gohans about this on quite a few occasions recently, especially with lockdown being such a prominent factor in our lives, and that kind of put the kibosh on the podcast for a good while, you know. Where we were getting used to everything, and then things kind of moved online, and we were talking a lot about that. Some people found it quite difficult to engage with events online for a number of reasons, and I think there's certain types of play that don't really translate very well, and certain parts of kink that don't really translate very well to being online. One of the difficulties that a lot of people have is with being online, you essentially got one person talking at a time, whereas when you are, say, back at the pub, there might be three or four different conversations going on at the same time. That's might overlap, you might sort of go and have a wander and mix around a bit. And you can't really do that online.
There are some apps and platforms where you can do that. There was one I was looking at the other day because I know that of a few people I met up in Birmingham when I was up there, and I was looking at their virtual munches. And, you know, it's not often I go up there, so if I wanted to attend another munch there, say hello to people I've met previously, you know, virtually is a good way of doing it. But I noticed they used an app that was kind of like a room, and as you move your kind of character around, you hear and see more of the people you're closer to.
That sounds quite interesting. That sounds like a slightly different way of doing it.
That just shows you, though, that people are finding all different ways to interact virtually and are taking advantage of different mediums, different platforms, seeing what works for them and what works for their local community.
Yeah, because I suppose the problem with most existing sort of chat platforms, particularly ones that can host large numbers of people, is their original base of operation is centered around the idea of only one person talking.
I've remembered. It's Gathertown.
Oh, right, okay.
But yeah, that looked like quite an interesting way of hosting virtual lunches. And I was meant to bring it up with you because I know that you support the community with an online presence, and maybe work with other community leaders and other people who are trying to create an online space, looking into that as well, I suppose. So behind on things like that, I'm probably the last one to hear about it.
What? I mean, I've never heard of it, but then again, I'm a technological philistine, so.
Mm. Well, it's interesting. I'm just having a wee look at it now. It's interesting because I do wonder if something like that, you can have kind of like online avatars and then maybe have some physical representation of a kink that you wouldn't necessarily get at an online munch. I mean,
like a massive horse penis down to my knee.
Not quite what I was going for, you know. But I mean, for instance, like with real life munches, you know, you wouldn't necessarily get dressed up the way you might for an event because you might be in a vanilla space. So it's interesting to kind of think about it and say, well, obviously online, if it's just going to be this wee picture of you, this representation, then what's to say you can't change that? And I mean, I don't know how customizable it is, but you know, you might be able to represent yourself in ways that you wouldn't be able to at another munch, you know?
Yeah, indeed.
Which brings us neatly on to why we asked Lee onto the show in the first place. So would you like to tell us about your specialist subject?
Am I going to get rapid fire questions about it now?
Oh, if only I was that organised.
No, this is far more shambolic. I mean, organic. I mean,
organic. We'll go with that.
Yeah, no. Organic works well for me, definitely. Yeah, so I have been invited on to talk about pup play and pet play as my specialist subject. This is generally the act of dressing and acting as, obviously pup play is as a puppy or a dog. The broader spectrum of pet play is, I mean, almost incalculably vast. You've got sort of pony players is one of the big ones. You also have kitten players. You have pig play, and so on and so forth with various different animals. But the two biggest ones are certainly pup play and pony play. And I myself am a pup.
Was that a bottom role or a top role?
So the generalization of it is a pup is generally a bottom, although everyone's dynamic is of course individual to them. There are pups who prefer to top. There are sort of relationship dynamics where you may have multiple pups where you have, you know, one who is described as an alpha pup because they top the other pups, but they do not top their handler, which is the scene name for a dom or master. Yeah, generally pups are bottoms, but don't take it as red.
Pleased that you decided to come on, and quite looking forward to seeing where this discussion goes and learning a bit about.
I'm terrified about where this discussion is going to go.
I think I've already learned something, you know, because like you say, the usage of the term handler instead of owner, and I suppose because both words have certain connotations. Owner, perhaps, pet more generally, handler to me suggests more someone who's brought in to look after a disobedient dog, a kind of like a training thing. So I don't know, is there some kind of natural brattiness implied? I think the laugh gives it away, you know.
Pups are a nightmare. From all of my experience with them, naturally, I wouldn't say naturally disobedient, but mischievous would be a better term for them. Bratty, definitely.
Is that just a general excitedness, would you say, rather than any kind of, it's not so much a malevolence, just this kind of so much energy, kind of with a pup. That energy has to go somewhere, if you see what I mean. So it just kind of almost explodes out the blocks, as it were.
Yeah, so you know, as you can sort of gather from the name with pup play, the majority of players, I'm not going to say all, have, that kind of demonic energy that a puppy has. You know, their attention can't be fixed on one thing for too long. If there's a new thing over there, it's going to be about that, despite potentially what their handler is trying to get them to do.
How did you discover it? And when you discovered it, why were you, or why do you think people generally are drawn to it?
So I first came across it. Genuinely, I think it was a really bad porn video. Really, like, looking back at it now from what I remember, like, just not very good, very artificial. Porn, unsurprisingly. It does. I mean, the worst crime porn has is the unrealistic expectation of the time I expect a plumber to turn up in. I saw this video and that's weird. That's something a bit different, and moved on, and didn't really think twice about it. And then, about 3 years ago now, I was attending the London Alternative Market.
Oh, yes.
And there happened to be a stall there which was just selling pup merchandise.
What is pup merchandise?
Right, so varying bits of the more kink-oriented gear for pup play, which I'm probably better to go into in more in-depth about that a bit later.
So things like, say, the leather masks, muscles, kind of stuff.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And so that caught my attention, and as ashamed as I am to say it, the two incredibly attractive guys running it caught my attention. And, you know, they saw me looking and they started chatting to me and, you know, very friendly. And then, like, the next thing I knew, I had, like, half mask on. And they were telling me how great it looked on me. And just from that point, something in my head clicked and I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, I can see this. Yeah, okay. This feels nice and I'm having praise rained on me. I didn't buy anything from them that time, but so I went back home and I looked a bit more into it because now I know what the name of the thing is and et cetera, et cetera. And so I went from there.
And you talk about the praise, you know, you mentioned the praise. Is that a big part of it, or at least for you or for some people, you know, is praise a big element of it?
So the thing I've always found really interesting with pop play is if you delve into the history of it, it originates in the leather fetish scene, particularly in America, the gay leather fetish scene. And it was at the time sort of a heavy form of degradation. It was, you know, to your sub or slave, you aren't even worthy of being referred to as a human. You were a dog.
Right,
yeah, I'm going to
crawling on the floor and not even being able to sit at the table to eat and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Crawling on the floor, eating from dog bowls, drinking from dog bowls, sort of maybe put in a cage to sleep at night, etc. It's a really heavy form of humiliation and degradation. And what I find fascinating is it is evolved so far from that. I mean, obviously, there for people who enjoy that side of it, that's still completely there. But it's evolved into its own thing completely, which is this whole, as I say, sort of like playful, energetic. Lots of pups are sort of very receptive to praise and adoration, and you know, we'll do things to just be called good boy. And it's just the dichotomy of that I find amazing.
It sounds quite wholesome, if I'm being honest with you. You know, like a lot of people kind of look at kink and think of it as this kind of sleazy backroom stuff, and I know, God knows, that it's not like that for the most part. I mean, there are aspects of it that are, there are people that love that there is that aspect to it, but I think a lot of people will lazily dismiss a lot of this stuff and just go, oh, that's this grubby kind of nonsense, you know.
It does, to me, it does sound like it could be quite tender and intimate. You know, it does,
yeah.
Not necessarily, you know, quite a loving, nurturing, you know, quite a way to maybe allow yourself to be vulnerable and, you know, have quite a special, maybe intimate moment with people and connect in a different way.
Yeah, so again, with the bizarre dichotomy thing, is it can be completely, if you want it to be, it can be completely dehumanizing. Or if you want it to be, it can be, as you're saying, it can be incredibly tender and personal. It's bizarre. I mean, for instance, the reason I really enjoy it is it's escapism.
Hmm.
So when I put my hood on, literally everything, every pressure I feel from my work, from my life, vanishes. Because a dog doesn't have to worry about bills or the car or going to work. What a pup has to worry about is that there's a ball over there.
Yeah, I was going to say, we all need that kind of element of escapism. Yeah, I can totally get how that could be cathartic, you know, to sort of almost to get out of your head, if that makes sense, you know, to sort of step away from your day-to-day. I can see how that could be appealing. I could do with a large slice of that at the end of a lot of days, you know.
I'm very well aware.
You don't have to answer this, by the way, but how did you kind of broach the subject with your partner? Is it something that they're fully on board with, or is it something that you do separately from them?
So the initial reaction from my partner was not great. I think, like, not as in, yeah, not as in, oh my God, what? That's weird. Get away from me. But more as in just, oh, I didn't know this about you. Which was particularly interesting because at the time I mentioned it to them, I had only just realized it because it was actually at that same London alternative market.
All right, okay. Oh, so it wasn't like something where it had been like that for a while and then you really had to. It was more like kind of, oh, okay. Look, I've just found this. This is pretty cool. I like this. I want some more of this kind of thing.
Actually, to be fair, it may have been the next market after I'd sort of looked a bit more.
Oh, okay.
And was then sort of eyeing, like, maybe I might buy some stuff.
Right. No, I see how that could kind of, as you say, grow organically and make it a bit easier rather than this kind of, here's my closet of stuff, have a look.
Yeah. No? Yeah. It wasn't my other half suddenly coming home to like discover me on the bed fully kitted out.
Was there like a learning curve for you? Because I saw that before we started recording, you held up a book and you had a book there. And I mean, I'm not surprised, but I didn't really think there'd actually be puppy play literature out there, you know, like factual, you know, other than erotica. I didn't really think there'd be much out there. Is there much out there on it?
There's a lot of sites and forums and etc. Dedicated. So literally, if you just search puppy play or pup play, there's a site called Puppy Pride Social, and a few others whose names currently escape me. There's definitely pages on FetLife. There are Discord chats. What's the other app? Of the many millions of apps, the other one. Telegram, that's the one. There's loads out there. The particular bit of literature you saw me hold up was A Brief History of Pup Play. By the wonderful Space Pup Silver, and is just one of many bits of literature they've put out, both sort of documenting, I mean, obviously in that case, the history briefly of pup play, or the sort of released other bits and pieces, which is sort of people's personal stories or people's experiences of pup play.
Is this, and I could be wrong, it might be a misconception of mine, because you said earlier that it started in the gay leather scene predominantly, and we've got, the whole kink community has got so much to thank the gay leather scene for in terms of sort of the development of kink and early kink. But would you say that pup play is something that is still sort of more prominent in like the gay community or amongst gay people than it is amongst sort of straight couples?
Yeah, I'd say certainly the predominant, predominantly gay or bi or pan men.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely by no means like exclusionary. I've been to several events where there have been women or sort of people, non-binary people who have attended, and you know, they are treated exactly the same. Yeah, that it's not a case of, you know, sort of all of the gay guys closing ranks. Sort of, oh, what are they doing here? You know, this is our thing. No, they are like, again, you put the hood on and you're seeing the world through different eyes. Mm. Yeah, that pup is not a girl being a pup. It's just another pup to play with.
Mm. You know, sometimes different demographics do get drawn towards different kinks. I mean, luckily that's been, you know, thankfully that's been broken down and has been broken down continuously and still continues to be.
There's possibly a sort of a side issue with it as well, which is sort of to bring it back to the gear side of things. Mm. If you're not looking at buying from the internet, the only places you will really find pup gear is sort of in the more gay-oriented shops in Soho or similar. So, I mean, I did a colossal amount of research before I ended up buying my hood, because I wanted what was right for me. There's a lot of different, like, there's a big variety of hoods available. Sort of rubber, neoprene, heavy leather. There are sort of different facial shapes, different ear types.
Yeah.
And as odd as it sounds, it makes a big difference to how you feel when you're wearing them.
Is it expensive to get into? If I, you know, if I wanted to go out and become cool hand pop, you know, would that be expensive if you know, for somebody wanting to get into it? Is it an expensive king?
Like, so I, fortune,
do you know what I mean? If you want good quality rope, you end up paying, you know, good, you know, you pay good money. Are there known, like in the rope community, there's no names, isn't there, that people know in certain, like, rope makers and suppliers. Is it the same in the pup community, and is it expensive?
It's very much, yeah, that you, to a degree, you get what you pay for. There are definitely sort of name suppliers who it's preferential to go to because you know the quality of their stuff. But more recently, the last sort of 4 or 5 years, from what I've found, there have been cheaper alternatives coming in. You know, they might not be as hard wearing or as durable as the more expensive variety, but I mean, yeah, so I'll use, for example, my hood. I think it was £160. So not cheap by any means. But, you know, I'd done the research. I'd been to a couple of pup events. At that point, I made that decision. I knew I wanted to get into it. But if you don't have the ability to do that or the money to do it, there are these cheaper options now, which you can buy and find out whether you like it or not, because you don't want to spend £100 on a mask and then go, oh, actually.
Do you ever tend to see anyone who, like you said, you'd kind of go on to the events before you'd kind of dived in fully, as it were? You see many people at events who maybe not yet made the jump to getting the gear, or perhaps some people who, if there are any people who the gear itself maybe isn't quite as important. And I know some people talk about dressing up in kink, not necessarily just sort of pet play or anything, but they talk about it being easier to get into your headspace if they're dressed a certain way. And I mean, I suppose that is probably very much the case with pet play in particular. So I'm sure other forms of pet play have a similar thing, but you know, does it work without it? Is, I guess, what I'm kind of asking.
Yeah, so obviously it's going to be dependent on the person and how they feel.
Right.
But the wonderful thing about pup play is you can get into it for nothing on the basis that it's about how you're treated by, well, if you want to do it with a partner, you can simply talk to them about it and go, I want to try this. You know, maybe if you just try calling me good boy, good girl, or sort of just call me pup or similar while I like curl up next to you on the sofa. Or if you want, you know, you can get into the gear side of things for as little as £20 by going to Pets at Home and buying a collar and a lead. And if you're feeling like really splashing out, a tennis ball. Yeah, and those things can help get you into that headspace. You know, you don't need the mask. You don't need poor gloves. You don't need a harness or anything like that. You know, it's your mentality. But if those things help you get into it, then great.
Oh no, I was just going to ask, are pet play events, are they sexual? Like, are they, you know, like dungeon events seem to be quite, often quite sexually heavily charged, even if there's no sex going on. They're quite heavily sexually charged atmospheres, or at least can be. I want things to open again. I really want things to open again. Oh. Sorry, I'm sidetracking myself. Are pup play events a sexual element to them? I mean,
so they're 100% are pup events that either have that incredibly sexually charged vibe or stuff definitely happens at. But there are also events. So there's things like Puppy Pride London, or the London Pup Social, which is it's held, or it was held, sort of on a Saturday morning in the basement room of a club in London, which is literally you turn up, gear up if you want to, and there's a ball pool pit, there's toys strewn everywhere, sort of, you know, chew toys, soft toys, etc.
Not sexual toys.
No, not sexual toys. And you know, you can just have a relaxed time playing around with other pups, and there's nothing particularly sexually charged about it. It's just a release of responsibility and having fun.
Is there any divide? Because I know some people are like really almost religious about BDSM isn't sex, you know, it's separate from sex. Are there people within the pup scene that are very much like, no, pup play is not sexual, and others are like, well, you know, is there any of that? Do you come across any of that in that scene?
I've come across one or two people who are like that. And I think
there's always someone who wants to put on somebody else's party, isn't
it? It's not... No, I think it's more tended to be their own personal mental connections.
Yeah.
I had a chat with someone a while ago who was a pup player, and I was talking to them, and they were saying, when I talk to people about pup play, and they go, oh, do you have sex like that? And her response is, do you have sex with your dog? because she very much sees it as a full on, no, I'm playing and acting as a dog. I am, for all intents and purposes, a dog. Mm. Which is sort of one very extreme end. And then you have, you know, the other end of things, which is just, no, it's just a kink, a fetish, a way of dressing, a way of relaxing, a way of enjoying myself. Go for it.
What are your thoughts on pet play, Burns? Any experience or interest or knowledge?
Ask my owner.
Ask your owner.
I don't know. I feel that I've got something of a pet play dynamic with my partner, but I don't feel like it fits in the same way that other people do. You know what I mean? There's, for one, there's virtually no physical representation of what we do. And it's more a kind of a persona thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of like a step up from like pet names that partners have for one another. It's like that, but gone that bit of a step further, and it's kind of integrated a bit more into our dynamic, as it were. Having a collar helps, I think. I try to avoid a lead wherever possible. But then I guess that's just the brat in me talking, you know. Yeah. Like, no, you're not putting the lead on me. Oh, you know. I don't know, maybe it's closer to what people do than I think it is, if you see what I mean. But I wouldn't necessarily call myself a pet player in the same way that other people are, if you see what I mean. And I certainly wouldn't say I have any level of expertise on it whatsoever.
I mean, to be fair, I wouldn't say I've got any level of expertise on it either. I just do it, much like my job.
Yeah. In terms of in BDSM, there's very few experts. There are people with varying experiences and different types and amounts of experiences, but experts as such, unless it's a proper skill, an acquired skill that's taken time and dedication to acquire, or you're somehow qualified, there are very few experts in BDSM, just people with different levels of different types of experience and different ways of articulating that experience and sharing that experience with other people.
I think probably the best advice is normally steer clear of anyone who claims to be an expert.
Mm.
I was going to say, unless they're like a known rope master or something, as you said.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, but again, that's an acquired skill that you can really, that you can see is something that's taken time and dedication. You can see their professional, their development and their career and their progression. You can see that somebody who is legitimately an expert through evidence. Don't listen to me. I'm not an expert. Burns. Did you see the hoodie, Burns? Belay, that is on the hoodie, Cool Hand Floggers.
Ah.
So, through lockdown, and I'll ask you in a minute how you spent your kinky lockdown, but through lockdown, I was furloughed for quite some time. And I'd already made a couple of floggers for myself previously. And I decided to just start building floggers and paddles and other things. And Cool Hand Floggers has slowly sort of become a thing, and it's an Etsy shop. And my partners do all the photographs and for selling it. It's just a hobby. We're not, do you know what I mean? It's just a passionate hobby. Impact is a passion. And we're not in it to make any money, because I'm quite reasonably priced, and I've not been doing it years. Do you know what I mean? I'm only just starting out. But yeah, so I treated myself and the girls to hoodies recently with a logo on. If we're trying to be a business and trying to make money from it, the last thing I would do would be buy us all logo hoodies. In like the first year of doing it, just for a laugh, do you know what I mean? But we're just having a bit of fun, and more importantly, we're providing the people who I'm really grateful to have been customers so far, like people that have bought stuff off of me, providing them with like hopefully good quality impact gear with like a real individual sort of passionate touch to it. Good. I'll show you some. I'll send you some of my bits and pieces.
Yeah, please. I'd like to see that.
Links to some bits and pieces. Have you been spending your kinky lockdown?
I have absolutely no idea what a lockdown is.
No?
I have not stopped working.
Okay. I thought you were going to say I live on Mars.
If only I lived in New Zealand, then I wouldn't have any idea what a lockdown is. No, I've not stopped working. So I've had pretty much exactly the same amount of free time I did have. Mm. Sort of my role play sessions for gaming moved online. So didn't really free up any time. It's depressing as it's out. I've not really deviated. Well, not deviantly deviated, anyway.
Are you looking forward to events starting back up again? Will you be one of those people that's going to be first out, you know, first of the month, first of the next pub play event? Or will you hold off and wait until the lay of the land?
So I might be first out of the blocks for a pub play event. Because for me, the social aspect of it is fantastic. It's great. And I get the feeling there'll be a lot less people turning up to a pub play event than there will be cramming into like a Wetherspoons garden.
Mm. What about you, Burns? Will you be keen to get to in-person lunches or and events, or will you hold back a little bit, do you think, and wait and see how things go?
I will and am currently holding back a wee bit. Partly just out of respect for people who've not had their jabs yet and all the rest of it. And I know there's quite a lot of people who haven't been fortunate enough to have them just yet. I know there's going to be a lot of people who are quite anxious about the whole kind of thing. That and fuck Tim Martin. Fuck him. What a prick.
I noticed the evil look you shot me when I mentioned Wetherspoons.
Aye, well, you know, there's just a shout out to the Neverspoons app that tells people about local pubs that they can support in their area, you know, which always a good shout, tend to have good beers on, you know.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about heading straight back out, you know. There'd be some things I'd be more keen to do than others. Like, I wouldn't mind. I'll go down to Eureka's, you know. I'll go down to O&I a couple of times. Probably won't do the big ones for a couple of reasons. But I will go down at some point in the summer and probably stay in a hotel down there or something as a bit of a treat. Because it's outdoors as well, it's all open air, do you know what I mean? So it's just a chance to get your tackle out in the sun and, you know, a bit of outdoor play, maybe a bit of outdoor impact and a bit of naughtiness, a bit of rope in the sun, a bit of nudie rope in the sun. I don't know if you'd be tempted for that one, Burns.
Indeed I might. I think one of the the glorious things of our own eye is that there's a lot of space. So I think people that are kind of maybe worried about the social distancing and people who are a bit more nervous about that kind of stuff, you've got a bit more room to just socially distance. Do you know what I mean? It's, you've got that bit more confidence. People will be sensible. And if they're not sensible, you've got enough space to get the fuck away from them. Whereas if you're sat in a pub and you've got someone being a dick, like, you're just on the table next to them, it's much harder to just get away.
Yeah, no, I think I'd definitely be tempted by our nine or something. There's a couple of other outdoor-y things I was looking at. Definitely be tempted.
You know, I'm quite surprised, in a way, that I've not seen more pub players at ONA, because it seems like the prime place for it.
Saw some ponies.
Yes, but I can't really... I don't know why you wouldn't get them there. I mean, there are sort of other pup outdoor events. So there's, I can't remember the name, there's sort of camping weekends and similar.
I mean, something like that sounds like it would be kind of an ideal sort of thing, especially if you've got, say, like somewhere kind of secure, as it were, you know, like you're not sort of doing your event and then you've got, pardon the expression, dog walkers just going about the place, you know.
It's a whole new meaning, dogging.
Whee. How long have you been sat on that one?
What do you think, is any reason why, out of all the animals in the world, why do people gravitate towards puppies and horses? Because puppies and horses aren't even similar.
Four legs good, two legs bad.
Well, you could argue they're both service animals.
Yeah, you're right, yeah. Yeah.
Both of them are used by the police.
Okay, you've got me. Yeah, okay.
There's maybe some topics we might want to stray away from just there.
Maybe that's what I need to do. I need to become a drug dog.
That means you'll have to walk up and down the train station platform in all your kits, sniffing people's butts and stuff. And I don't think that.
Yeah, but
is there any, you know, like with some kinks, there's a lot of crossover, like with Daddy Don Baby Girl and DS, because like that Daddy Don Baby Girl isn't necessarily power exchange, but there's a lot of crossover with DS, and like there is a bit of crossover, I know, between sort of Daddy Don Baby Girl and pet play a little bit, you know. Yeah. Is that something, you know, you're aware of? Is there any other kink crossovers? You know, why do you think some kinks, like, it's a bit weird, but you know, it's not weird, but some kinks cross over and others don't so well, do they?
There's certain kinks you can't imagine interacting. But ones I've definitely noticed, obviously leather and rubber are both very prevalent in the pup community.
Yeah, if you're going to dress up in leather, you need something to dress up as.
Would you say there's much crossover with age play?
Certainly some, but I wouldn't say there's more crossover than you'd get in sort of any other compatible kink.
Yeah.
Would you ever be tempted to go to a pet play event, Burns, just to see what it was all about, or to dip your toe, or to explore it further?
I'm not really sure. I mean, as I say, the dynamic I have with my partner, it's not a pup thing. But the problem I have is, and it started as a joke about me being like having a hairy chest, but with me being called Bear. But the problem is, in the community, Bear has a very specific meaning, of which I do not fit the bill.
No, sweetheart, not at all. You're more of a bear cub.
But
you're a baby bear.
But again, you know, that's the thing. What I don't want to do is kind of start calling myself something for whatever reason. And then I feel like, oh no, that's not what you are. This has a meaning beyond. Do you see what I mean? So I'm always that bit wary of it, you know?
I can genuinely relate to that because there are certain changes in my own personal and sexual identity that I've addressed over the last, say, maybe 8 years, more recently in the last 5 years, 4 years. And sometimes you think, well, you know, that is it, you know, are you a fraud if you, you know, because the way other people use it in other contexts, I don't know. You know, it can be hard. It can be hard playing. It can be hard. It can be hard with sort of terms and labels when they come with expectations or a certain image already attached to them.
I think so.
A friend of mine's username on FetLife contains the word bear, despite the fact he does not fit any of the parameters which are generally associated, because it was a nickname he always went by. It was a general screen name for him. And he had a lot of fun at first logging in to sort of discover a weirdly full inbox. Quickly worked out why.
A lot of people presumably thinking, oh, so you're into, oh, no, wait, no, you haven't.
A lot of people who just see the word, make their own mental connection. And then, as people are wont to do on FetLife, don't bother to read the profile.
And send the same copy-paste message that they've sent to everyone else.
Well, people read your profile and they take it too literally. I had somebody come up to me at a munch once, a complete stranger, and touch my hands in an attempt to find out if they were actually cold or cool. I mean, honest to goodness, I mean, what the heck's all that about?
That's quite funny.
I hope to hell no one tries to use me for climbing, Lynn.
What, you mean to say you're no good for rappelling?
No, but I'm very good at letting people down.
Oh,
that's not true.
Well, I tell you what, mate, you certainly haven't been a letdown this evening. It's been really, really interesting, some of the stuff we've talked about, and, you know, I hope that anyone who takes the time to listen to this finds it as interesting as I have. I'm thinking we should jog on to
Encyclopedia of Unusual Sexual Practices.
Oh, the encyclopedia. Should I get it out?
Go on, whip it out.
Go on, get it out for us.
Okay. So, Bile, okay, me old mucker. So this is the Encyclopedia of Unusual Sexual Practices. I found this in an Oxfam bookshop about maybe 15 years ago, so a long time ago, and it's kind of sat in my tool drawer for a very long time, and it's gathered dust, and it comes out occasionally, it disgusts people, and we've kind of been working our way through, taking, you know, bits kind of almost in alphabetical order as we go. We're on to G. Okay,
we found the G spot.
Oh, glory be. Well,
the G spot indeed.
Took us long enough.
Yeah, well, we're going to start off with genuflation, spelled genuflation, and is the act of rubbing the penis between your partner's knees. Unfortunately, unlike some of them, this hasn't got a breakdown of a Latin name. Some of them have really got a good breakdown. Although we've also got, I chose this one, this is quite a simple one, I thought it was quite sweet. Grooming, and I don't mean... I do not mean...
Oh, no.
Grooming. No, Ben. So I know where you're going with this. I do not mean grooming in a sexual predator way. I mean grooming of a sex partner is commonly found amongst primates, that kind of grooming. In addition to the normal grooming one does day-to-day, grooming is used as foreplay. So it's about the kind of grooming that primates do, and it is a sexual act amongst people as well. This is quite interesting, actually, because it's got a bit here that does relate to my relationship or one of my dynamics. Sex slaves often prefer performing tasks that involve the grooming of their masters. These rituals include bathing, manicuring their partner's nails, shampooing and styling their hair. So it has actually got a link to MS, and it's a link that is something that is prevalent in one of my dynamics. You know, I won't go into detail, but there is, you know, there are sort of, there is protocol that involves grooming. So that's why I decided to include that one. Have you got any experience in that, or is that anything that goes on in the puppy world, Groomy?
So it's nothing I personally witnessed or experienced, but I can totally see it being part of pups and their handlers' dynamic. There is also the like UK Mr. Puppy Awards and similar. You definitely want to be groomed before you went into that.
I had a kind of mental image of kind of like a pup play kind of Crufts with Best in Show and all that, you know.
All right, you're not too far off.
Okay, do you want the next one? Harpaxophilia.
What?
Harpaxo. Don't Google it. Harpaxophilia.
Google it? I don't even know how to spell it.
Any guesses?
No idea whatsoever.
Okay.
I'm trying to recall the none of the Latin I know.
Harpax for robber, and philia is an attachment, indicates sexual arousal from robbery. So it's harpaxophilia. Sexual arousal from robbery. Consensual sex scenes or fantasy that utilises the stimulus produced when being robbed often consists of having victims retire and sometime later being awakened by a security-clad cat burglar. Okay. Oh, sorry, not security. Scantily clad. I need to pull off the glasses. I'll tell you what, though, you do not go cat burglar scantily clad. You wear sensible shoes. You wear hard-wearing jeans that aren't likely to leave any fibres anywhere, and a top you can burn. You don't do it in a G-string.
Oh, no, I reckon if you did do it in a G-string, like, they might be less inclined to try and catch you.
Depends how well greased you are.
Wait, are you saying you go cat burgling without being greased?
See, that was my first mistake, wasn't it, really?
Okay, here we go. Herophilia. I don't know how you're going to feel about this, Burns. You'll either celebrate this or you're just pissed off.
Herophilia. What the fuck's that? Is that like getting a stiffy to watch a Marvel movie or something?
No. From Heros, yeah? Sacred or holy. An inphilia attachment to. Refers to the arousal of sacred objects. This may include such things as masturbating with crosses or while sitting on church pews. Some have even broken into churches at night and had sex on the altar.
Well, you know, got to atone for your sins somehow.
I think we'll leave that there for tonight, for the unless you want one more.
Go on, give us one more.
Oh, one more, shall I find a good one? So it's in alphabetical order, right? It's got, I shit you not, it's got homosexuality. And next to homosexuality, it just says, see gays. Fucking not joking.
Marvellous. Well, I mean,
that's someone saving on the printing ink, isn't it?
If you were interested in homosexuality, you probably would want to see the gays, wouldn't you?
Oh, gosh, I do one that I can't possibly pronounce. Hybristophilia. No, I've got it right, actually. Hybristophilia.
Hybristophilia? Really like Bristol.
Hybristophilia, could be. As a paraphilia of a marauding predatory type in which sexuotoic arousal and facilitation and attainment of an orgasm are responsive to and dependent upon being with a partner known to have committed an outrage or crime, such as rape, murder, armed robbery. So it's somebody, hybristophilia is somebody who only gets arousal from being with somebody who has committed a high-level crime, such as rape, murder, armed robbery. From the Greek, hybridzian, to commit an outrage or crime against somebody, and philia the attachment of. Men living in prison often have ongoing relationships with three or four women. These men offer excitement and mystery and intrigue. Yeah, because you get that, don't you? Then women who write pen pal letters to prisoners.
Hmm. I wonder if those people also have harpaxophilia.
Yeah. Apparently, Charles Manson's family is an example of this phenomenon. Well, Actually, that's more common. So initially reading that part was really weird, but actually it's a lot more common than you think.
Yeah, you sort of start thinking, yeah, this sounds really weird, and you go, oh no, wait, I can actually think of demonstrable examples of this, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more relatable than the, what was the very first one? Genuflation?
Yeah, God. I try and purge it from my mind as soon as I read it, if I'm entirely honest. I mean, how else do you expect me to sleep at night?
I assume with that book safely locked up.
With a raging hard on.
I do. Have you got something dirty for me, Burns?
Indeed I have.
Are we going to wait until Belay's got off the call, or are you going to give it to me now?
I was going to indulge my voyeuristic streak then.
I was joking, and however dirty it is, and whatever he wants to give me, you can stay and watch.
So this time we have 1994's winner. This is from Philip Hook's The Stonebreakers. His hands set out on a magnificently daring journey across limitless expanses of thrillingly unfamiliar flesh, exulting in the possession of unknown territory. He traced an exploratory path from the nape of her neck, over her breasts, under her straining buttocks. Soon there were no longer bodies on a bed. They became some mad mobile sculpture, manipulated this way and that in the throes of its own creation. Two forms in search of positions of perfect linkage. Straining buttocks to me sounds like she's trying to go for a shit. I just can't get that image away from you, you know.
You're not leaving us with that, Burns, you tease.
No, but like, could you imagine, you're about to have sex with your partner and you kissing them, caressing them, and then they just whisper in your ear, I'm doing the shite.
Burns. Do you know what? I want Burns.
Go on.
I want Joyce.
Oh, God. James Joyce again.
Joyce, please give me Joyce. Don't make me beg for Joyce. Give us Joyce. Give the listeners Joyce. The listeners want Joyce, not me.
Right, hang on.
Belay wants Joyce. Don't you, Belay?
I do, definitely.
Give us all the Joyce.
Right.
Give us full throttle. Give it balls out, mate. Go on. Really give it to me.
From the one of his letters, December the 2nd, 1909. Right? My love for you allows me to pray to the spirit of eternal beauty and tenderness mirrored in your eyes, or to fling you down under me on that soft belly of yours and fuck you up behind like a hog riding a sow, glorying in the open shame of your upturned dress and white girlish drawers, and in the confusion of your flushed cheeks and tangled hair. Sorry, just let me recover from that just a moment.
I mean, that is beautiful. I always like a bit of Joyce, and I appreciate you doing it put on the spot like that, and the vigour that you did it with. It's quite something. I enjoy Joyce.
Joyce, I believe Burns always does it with vigour.
He does. You played that scene. What I would really like is an extended audio recording of Burns reading Joyce, so that I can have it on when I'm settling down for bed at night, and sort of on headphones just to sort of slip off to the love letters of Joyce read by Burns.
That is guaranteed to give you some dreams.
And a real cockstand.
Oh, cockstand. So, I mean, I think that just leaves us to wrap things up, really, doesn't it? It's about time, would you not say, Burns?
Indeed. I think we've had a good chat, learned a few things.
Belay, thank you ever so much for coming on and sharing your experiences about pup play and pet play with us. You know, just finally, if somebody was listening to this and they were kind of intrigued, what would you say would be, you know, if you were starting out on the pet play scene again, what would you say to somebody who was just sort of maybe curious? What advice would you give them?
Oof. Pet players are genuinely some of the friendliest people I have ever met. If you can find a local event happening near you and you feel comfortable going, absolutely go for it. You will be 100% welcome there.
Awesome, awesome. And like you said, you know, if you Google it, or if you look on sites like that, like you find, you know, if there are people that obviously lots and lots of people into it, it's quite popular.
It's gained in popularity hugely in the last, like, 8-9 years.
Cool. Well, I can only thank you once again for coming on. Any final thoughts, Burns?
I think it's a topic we may even revisit at some point, you know.
Yeah.
Certainly interesting, some stuff that I didn't know already. And it was great. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for being a good boy.
And thank you for tuning in and listening to another episode of Variant Degrees, a BDSM podcast. Good night.